realize it because you were stuck in your head thinking about your problems. And so it's the beginning of the present moment is that, oh. And then you can go a little deeper. Then you can be experience the present moment as the energy field in your body, as the aliveness in your body. Oh. And then you can go even deeper and experience the present moment as the awareness of all this, rather than the present moment isn't the flower as such. The flower appears in the present moment, but essentially what the present moment is, it's the consciousness in which you see the flower. Otherwise there would be no flower. Remove the consciousness, I don't know what's left. No flower. You all know the famous saying, the tree in the forest. If a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a noise? And of course it doesn't, because noise implies not only a sensory organ, it also implies a consciousness that's perceiving through the sensory organ that brings about what we call noise. And without that, there's no noise. And you can even follow that up and ask other similar questions. But what I'm pointing to is the present moment, in essence, is not the things. The things appear in the space of the present moment. It's always present moment. You can't get out of that. Your life is always one with now. Your life and now are one. If you doubt that, then let me know one day when you can say, my life is not now. Or maybe you remember when it wasn't now. Not possible. Life and now is synonymous. Life is now, now is life. But the mind says, yeah, but what does that mean? Isn't that just words? No, it's more than words. The words are pointing to a realization. And that is, whatever appears has to appear in the present moment, but in itself is not the present moment. It is a form that appears in the space of now. Every body in this room, or wherever the body is a form that appears in the space of now. Whatever happens, whatever thought comes, whatever emotion is felt, is a form that appears in the space of now, and that now is consciousness, timeless, ever present. You are that. I am that. So that's really what the present moment is. So ultimately it's yourself, it's consciousness, and you are consciousness. So bringing attention to the now takes people out of confusion. The now begins with sense perceptions. So encourage people, or do it to yourself if you find you become lost in your mind. Come into your senses first. Touch something. Whatever, any surface, feel it. Then look. Already confusion subsides because your attention gets away from thinking into the sense, the act of perception. Then listen. Less and less confusion. What is there too confused about right here? Nothing. Then breathing. And breathing takes attention into the inner body. Alive, it's alive. Where's the confusion? It's gone. You stopped giving attention to your thoughts, the confusion is gone. And then you know, go even deeper into just the spaciousness of stillness. No confusion in there. And then, that's fine. Every time that happens, use that process of reorientation of focus of your consciousness into now. So this is the advice you can give, and you do it with people when they come to you in a state of confusion. Okay, say, okay, sit there, okay, look around, look, touch something, look at this, listen to the rain, listen to the wind, listen to the birds, listen to the car. Be there as the presence for it. Confusion can end very quickly that way. Present moment is the exit point. Out of confusion is the point of exit out of your mind. It's always there. You just have to acknowledge it. So, and when it happens again, same process. No more confusion. It's a shift for people. You get drawn back into the old consciousness and step out again. That's why we call the awakening the awakening process. For most people, it is we are transitional. Most of the people who are going to this, we are transitional beings. It's a very significant and incredible thing, from one way of being, one state of consciousness that's been there for thousands and thousands of years, to a different state of consciousness. And so many people live in two worlds, in two states, still shifting. And gradually, awareness takes over from continuous thinking. And then it's so different. It's like I sometimes call it, as I say at the end of the new earth, a new species is emerging on the planet. One could almost say that. You still look the same, but your inner state is so different from the normal insane state that it's like a completely new species. And yet it's already arising in you. It's not something that you need to arrive at some future point. I want to become a new species. It's already arising.
For the past several years, I've been making a concerted effort to live especially sort of, you know, conscious, present, spiritual path, and doing yoga and meditation and retreats and that sort of thing. And now when I hear people talk about, you know, spiritual stuff, I kind of cringe. It's like, I feel like there's this spiritual thing that's like separate, you know, separate from this, you know, this special dimension. At first it was really great, you know, because I was meditating like, you know, 10 hours in a weekend, and I could tell everybody how cool it was and, you know, how special and unique I felt, you know, practicing this special spiritual life. And now I listen to what you say and other people say, and I just want to hear about like how I'm no one. And I mean that sincerely in being in this, but just not having to, even though, you know, I am conscious, all these words that just seem to get in the way a lot of the time. I mean, you know, they're concepts and everything, but I feel the sweetness of not, just really not having to be this special, unique, you know, spiritual person on top of being a regular person. It's like this, you know, double-decker sandwich that I got to carry around, and it's getting stale, and I don't know. I don't know if there's a question in there, but
I know
maybe
the
you
question.
Could maybe you could speak to
Thank
that.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. Thanks. Well, you overdid it a little bit with your spiritual practice. And hence the reaction now, because you have to get back to some normality after all that specialness over that, both your spiritual practice, where you thought of yourself as special and your practice as special. You went quite far to an extreme, and you're now experiencing the reaction to that extreme. And that's good. In other words, you don't want to hear about anything spiritual anymore. I've had it, right? So you overdid it. Now there's a reaction. Don't mention to me anything spiritual anymore, you say. But, of course, you know the famous expression, what is it, the baby and the bathwater? Don't throw out your baby with the bathwater.
Well, it's like it's all spiritual. So
it's all spiritual.
It's so separate.
So now, first you went to that extreme. Now you go to an extreme of reaction, and eventually you end up in the middle where every moment is spiritual as it is. There's nothing special. Spirit is not separate from daily existence. So that's when we say spiritual, we are not referring to some realm out there that is to be achieved at some point where you become more special than you are now. It's not going to happen. It's here and now. We're going deeper into the here and now. That's spiritual. Now, you are a little bit tired of these words because you went too far to that extreme. So you have to realize if you're a little bit perhaps like a Christian who was once very religious and suddenly got fed up, and then occasionally I have people in talks who are ex-Christians, and the moment I say Jesus said, they go, oh, don't talk to me about or anything that's remotely Christian. I don't want to hear that. I've had all that. So they don't realize because of that. Of course, they had a somewhat distorted view of what the whole thing was about, so they didn't. But they can't stand the terms anymore. And that's fine. It's a phase. You'll come through that. Maybe it's happening already. It's the ordinariness. Spiritual means the more spiritual you are, the more ordinary you are, the more non-special you are. And again, for the ego, that means, okay, I have to become more non-special. How do I become ordinary? Okay, that's... I need somebody to teach me to be ordinary. So I understand your dilemma, and perhaps you understand it also. And so this... Nothing special, chopping wood, carrying water, as Zen defines spirituality ultimately. What is the spiritual life? Chopping wood, carrying water, which is the kind of thing you do in Zen monasteries at daily doing. In my case, it's buying some food in the store, going to have a cup of coffee, taking the dog for a walk in the forest, listening to the BBC World News, having a glass of wine occasionally with a meal, watching a movie, nothing extraordinary, and so quite an ordinary existence. And so it's hiding in there, the spirituality is in there, it's not away from there. Just this. And so I'm sorry about these words that we use, but language is limited, so we have to use certain words. And perhaps the emotion around these words then eventually is going to go, and they become neutral again, and you can use them for what they are, which is simply useful pointers, no more. Thank you. Is proximity, this is Nancy from Florida, is proximity to someone who is in presence important, or is listening to an awakened person on CD equally helpful? If the readiness is there, I would say listening on CD can be equally helpful for those who are ready. And even a book can be equally helpful for those who are ready. For others, the added presence of an actual physical presence of the teacher might sometimes break certain egoic resistances, but that's more the case in a disciple-guru relationship, and so I'm not a guru as such, although some people would want me to be one. A guru works closely together with us, with disciples, and I did that for a little while, for a few years, and that was fine, but life has now called upon me to fulfill a different function, and there's still a place for spiritual teachers who work with people more closely on a prolonged basis with disciples. Again, one could say a lot about that, the dangers involved and the possibilities involved in that. But I know that from correspondence I receive that many people's lives have changed from watching CDs or reading books. They just, because the presence isn't in the presence, when you recognize presence in another, that means there's presence, there must be presence in you. So it's always in you. When you recognize there's this great spiritual being there, how do you recognize it? Through the very same consciousness in you, because if it wasn't in you, you wouldn't recognize this. This person would look totally ordinary to you and would say, I don't know what this fuss is all about. And that's, so there were always many people who never, you could, if without that opening, you can live with the Buddha for 10 years, 20 years, and say, he's just a completely ordinary person. And he, in a way, he is. I mean, he's more ordinary than ordinary without an ego, that's true. But so when you recognize presence in another, at that moment, there is the presence in you. It's the very, it's only presence can recognize presence. So it's always in you. So whether you can recognize it when you see a CD, you say, wow, where does that wow come from? The power, the aliveness that the mind is telling me is in that person there. No, it's in you. So it's better not to project it and make a person special, which the mind tends to do. Well, the person is special, but so are you. You are equally special. There's nobody closer to God than you are, to use that word, except that they may not know it. They may not know it. So when you recognize this, the wonderful thing is, turn your attention within and say, where is the realization that this is a wonderful spiritual being talking right now? How do I know that? Because you are a wonderful spiritual being. So to speak, you're not a being, you are an expression of being, but the words are limiting.
Through my relationship with Eckhart, that any and all my ideas I had about what a relationship should be, what my relationship should look like, and how I wanted my relationship to be, it took a lot of looking and some years where I finally realized that I wasn't having a real relationship. I was just having a relationship with an idea in my head. I wasn't meeting the other and seeing the other, as we can say, as myself, or the essence of the other, the essence of Eckhart. But I just had all my expectations and ideas, my imagination, and that's how I was relating. And you could only see that in the daily activities, in your daily life. You could know this, and I knew it on some level, that consciousness, that stillness was not about thought. It was not about your ideas. And you can know this, and in a relationship, it's not about the idea of a relationship. But that's when the awareness, the inner work, needs to be done. You have to take it beyond the intellectual, and then actually then to discover it. So it's the discovery becomes this inner, deep knowing that, okay, what I see, what I'm doing, is that I'm not relating with another human being as consciousness, as stillness, but as ego. So when I saw that, and it took many times seeing it, for example, we come from different cultures. Eckhart is from Germany. Even though I'm born in Canada, I'm Chinese, so I had the cultural conditioning of Chinese. We bring to it our own conditioning. And plus, being a woman, and him a man, the idea, and all that sort of stuff. The era in which Eckhart was born, the generation in which I was born. So I have certain expectations that I brought to the relationship. The first one I remember is very close to when Eckhart and I first got together in relationship. And I thought I had to do sort of all the cooking, you know, all the cleaning up afterwards. And that was my conditioning. And he didn't have to do anything. And I didn't realize that his conditioning also is that, because he was brought up in Europe, Germany and in Spain, where he had his mother, his stepmother, who did everything. So it was easy for him just to, that was it. You just allow the woman to do it. At least this was my perception, because he was not doing too much, right? So here I was. And then I was starting to get resentful. Like, you know, here I am chopping the vegetables or whatever, or cleaning up, and I'm like, oh, why doesn't he do anything? You know, he's got to do something. You know, like, why do I have to ask? I shouldn't have to ask. Well, these, and then suddenly I realize, oh my God, these are all my thoughts in my head, my expectations, instead of just telling him, you know, I don't want to do all the cooking, you know? So I told him that, and he goes, oh, okay. Well, you don't have to cook, we'll go out. I went, oh, okay. So we'll go out. All right. I don't think at that time I didn't really say to him, well, just help me, you know. I just said, okay, yeah, okay, we'll go out. Because I didn't really like cooking anyways, at least so I thought at that time. So we went out, and we went out a lot, and then plus we traveled and we ate out again. So I was feeling more and more unhealthy. And anyways, when we bought a house together over in the island and had this wonderful big kitchen, I found myself cooking and able to. I liked cooking. I enjoyed it. And we wanted to be at home. So we came back to the same scenario again, right? We weren't going out to the restaurants, and here I was cooking. But this time I was able to express, to say, you know, I would like some help. And he would go, okay. But then, you know, several weeks and months would pass, and I'd have to still keep on asking, well, I need some help now. And then I can see it here, just this thought arise in the background, like, oh my God, why is it that I always have to ask him? It's just like a little kid where I have to, you know, always have to ask a little kid what to do. Why can't he just offer and help? I went, wow, this is what I expect. I expect him to just help when his nature, his conditioning is that he just doesn't unless he's asked. So I had to resign and just say, okay, I just have to ask. And it was me that was stirring up all the angst, all the anxiety, in the thought that I wanted him different than what he is. So I don't mind now. I just say, okay, time to help. And he'll go, okay. And he'll help. So, I mean, those are just the superficial things in the relationship, the daily things. Because many people ask me about what my relationship with Eckhart is like and how wonderful it must be. And yes, on the level of silence, of stillness, it's absolutely wonderful. I feel like I'm right at home in the stillness. We don't have to say a word and can just sense the stillness. But we have the daily life. And this is where most of us can get caught up in. Because you can meet somebody and you have that wonderful spiritual connection and you go, ah, this is wonderful. This is great. And some people are conscious of that spiritual connections, and others think that this is just, they don't know about the spiritual end of things, but they just sense something. They just love this person. They want to be with this person, etc., until you live with them. And it is a working out. It is a giving space to allow them to have their conditioning, because that's, we all have it. But it's our own job to be aware of what our conditioning is, what our expectations are, and to hear the other, to, okay, what's their conditioning? It took several years before Eckhart would never really ask me for anything. For example, I learned this when we were in Germany one time, and Eckhart wasn't there. He decided not to come for dinner, and we went with a group of people to dinner. And one woman said, "Is your water no good?" And I said, "Yes, it's fine." And then my friend who sat next to me, who is also German, said, "She's really asking you for a sip of water." And I went, "She asked me if my water was good. But she didn't ask me for a sip." No, that's how we ask. We don't ask directly. And I went, oh my gosh, Eckhart's been doing this to me for years. I thought, you mean he was really asking for a sip of my water and I never knew it? So, and I went, okay, I understand. So it is learning each other's own conditioning and seeing how we apply our own conditioning, our own idea of how our relationship or how communication should be when the other has, you know, some other conditioning going on, some other way of being in this world and relating how we relate. And this happens all around the world. And this is where miscommunication comes in, conflict comes in, because we have all these different ideas. But it's to see and to learn what those ideas, what the expectations, what that conditioning, what that culture is to learn it and not demand that they change and be like yourself. So when I went back to the hotel and I told Eckhart that, and he went, yeah, that's right. And then it's interesting because when I finally knew and understood what he wanted, he was then be able to, because I was able to communicate. Maybe we just didn't know what was going on. I don't know what he thought. Maybe he thought I was totally selfish all this for many years or something. I don't know. But he was then able to now say, "Can I have a sip of your water?" So it's giving each other that space just to be and watching, learning, listening, to hear just exactly what it is that's being communicated So it's beautiful that we have these two cultures, German and Chinese, which are very two strong different cultures, and just finding out about it, exploring. However, the basis of our relationship, I think, would not have lasted. I probably would have walked out a long time ago because I would have thought he was lazy if I didn't have this understanding and this primary importance of having God, consciousness, stillness, whatever you want to call it, in my life first, and having that be the holder, the container of what the form, in this case, my form in relationship with Eckhart, is. That's the holder. And to realize that whatever form, and it's taken many years to realize that whatever form is going on is not as important as the background, the stillness in which the form emerges, arises. And that's the beauty. And then when that stillness is there, then the things, the everyday life, yeah, there'll be ups and downs. It's not always great and it's not always bad. It's, you know, sometimes we got to do things. But it's coming back always just to the present moment, to go beyond the conditioning, knowing that it's there. Maybe even having the awareness that, yes, you have expectations, but then allowing the expectations to go. Just let it go and just see them as that, expectations. And just to live in that stillness and move and breathe and communicate from that place. And just allowing the nature of the other person just to be. I get a kick out of every time when we, because we live on Salt Spring and we have this recycling thing going on, and we go to the recycling and we have these containers of, you know, paper, plastic, etc., bottles. And so we have about 6-7 containers. We load up in the truck and we go. And Eckhart by nature is very, you know, just kind of slow. He just sort of casually just sort of moves and does it. And I'm a little quicker. So we can go to the recycling, and here we're doing our jobs. And I realize, wow, I've done like 5 containers and he's done 2. And, you know, it's like, okay, it's okay. It's fine. This is how he is. He just moves a little slower. I could create a story in my head about it, but I've accepted that, okay, he's with me and he's doing it, and it's enough. And if I want him to do more and me less, then if I want him to do it in half, I could easily just hop in the car and wait and let him do his half, I suppose. But it's just easier for me to do it. He's there. It's okay. So every relationship goes through just that working out of how everyday life is going to emerge. We have a unique circumstance, and I think we both really love it, and that is we're fortunate enough to have 3 places. In Vancouver, we each have our own apartment that is right across from each other, so we have our own space, and then we live part-time together on the island. And some people will think, wow, that's just so weird. And other people think, that's neat. I think for both of us, at least for me, I love it. I love having my own space. So you find a way to live together. Now, not everybody is going to be able to afford to have that amount of space, physical space. But it's a working out, it's finding the way. And we need to find that way, respect each other, be able to give that other person the space. I know just on this awakening process, it requires a lot of space. At least it did for me, a lot of alone time to search, to look, to be what you can say even in meditation, although I wasn't quite always sitting there in formal meditation, but just being aware, being able to see the mind working and operating and how the thoughts just arise and what kind of those thoughts are, and not, as what Eckhart says, taking your thoughts so seriously. To be able to just, okay. It's not so important. All my ideas, opinions, expectations is not important. And in order to have what we can call a successful relationship, we need to each come to that place to realize, not intellectually, but really internally, inner knowing that, yes, the form of this moment is secondary. The primary importance is the space in which all communication, in which all love, presence, activity flows. And it's not so much a commitment to the other, but a commitment to your relationship with God, with stillness. And that's the true relationship. Is stillness, is God consciousness. And when you're truly committed to that, then life flows and shit happens. And it will always happen. True life is now, it's not what happens. It's the space in which it happens. And that's love.